Nation, this week's bonus episode is a little bit different. I know that you've all heard Kevin Crispin many, many times on the show, and a lot of times we're talking about his podcast, Sad Times, and we wanted to let you guys get an idea of what the show's about. So today, we're actually releasing my episode of him interviewing me on Sad Times on Hysteria 51, so you guys can get an idea. And if you go to the show notes, you'll find links to everything, and it is a very important show, I believe. He is doing a fantastic job, and it can help a lot of people. If you're suffering yourself from issues or know someone who has, please do give it a listen and go to the show notes. You'll find links to everything in there. Without further ado, here is Sad Times, me.
Brent, thanks for being on. Did you know, before we get started, that this is a Fourth Hand production?
It is. You are actually in Fourth Hand Studios.
I know.
Berwyn, Illinois.
Yeah, lower fourth dimension.
Fourth Hand LLC.
Oh, is it an LLC now?
Yeah.
Wow. What do you have to be sad about?
That's a limited liability company. Corporation. I don't know the term.
Yeah, I don't either. I just know that...
I pay the bills.
Yeah, does that mean you get tax breaks?
I'm not at liberty to say this year.
Okay, great. Well, we can just cut that.
Actually, I can say it'll just be a write-off. I can use it as a write-off.
Okay, there you go. Hey, everybody, welcome into Sad Times. As you know, my name is Kevin, and let me just give you a brief filler in on the show. Each week, whether it be streaming live on Twitch at www.twitch.tv/sadtimeskc or here on the podcast, I have a guest that I bring on, and we talk about all sorts of things. It's called Sad Times. We also talk about anxiety. We talk about trauma. We talk about any number of things where the person went through some hard stuff in their life, how they coped with it, how they acted, and kind of what came of it, and those around them and how they acted. So the goal here, of course, is to be a little more open about all the shit that we go through so that we can have a bit more of an empathetic world, ideally. So with that being said, my good friend, Brent Hand, is on the show. Hey, Brent, how are you?
I am doing well. It's early Sunday morning, Sunday fun day. Mm-hmm. We're talking about depression.
That's right.
That's
fun. It's like church. Well, let's just go ahead and get started, Brent. So I've known you.
Hold on.
Yeah, let it out, buddy. Hold on. Lay back on the couch.
I'm ready.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I've never done this.
I
don't mean to interject, but it's fun to talk to you about this. You know, you talk to friends about things. So I've never just sat down. I don't go and see a therapist. So this will be interesting. We're going to see what happens.
Have you ever seen a therapist?
I have seen a therapist one session, one time ever.
One session, one time ever.
Yep.
Was it after the Seinfeld finale?
It was.
Yeah.
And I was like, it was a show about nothing.
Yeah.
And they didn't get it.
Yeah, they weren't really getting it. They needed a laugh track. Okay, so you've only been one time.
Yeah, ever. And it was a gentleman, he was literally in his 80s. And I felt so, and that's not a joke, and I felt so disconnected from him that it just didn't.
Find him?
Insurance.
Yep, that's how I found my
insurance
therapist.
Said go here. Mm-hmm. And it was in Oak Park, Illinois. Mm-hmm. It was across the street from the theater there on the main drag. I don't know, that Fox Theater or whatever it's called. I don't know, it was just a weird area. It was at night, he's in there, you know, and literally it was he's like, you can sit, you don't have to lay down, that's kind of a cliche, you know, let's talk, here's some Kleenexes, and you know what I mean. I didn't you know, and then after that I'm like, okay. Yeah,
it wasn't. Yeah, and to you and everybody else who's listening, I've been through a lot of therapists. I was forced to go to a therapist when I was 8. I didn't really know why. Nobody really explained it to me.
Yeah, I'm not bashing therapists at all.
No.
I'm just saying that one wasn't for me.
Right. That's what I'm saying, is often you'll come across a therapist that isn't for you. And that's important to be like, oh, you know what? We just don't click.
You know what? I also don't go to a chiropractor because one tore a muscle in my back. That doesn't mean chiropractors don't help a lot of people.
I
actually went to a chiropractor and he went to adjust my back and he tore a muscle.
Holy
fuck. And I had to go to the hospital afterwards. And then the doctor's like, they're quacks. You know, so... That's a fun experience.
Wow. Yeah. So let's just say, you know, for the argument of this podcast, let's say that you were to continue it on with the old man and down there in downtown Oak Park, and you would have had your therapy.
That's Mr. Old Man.
Mr. Old Man.
Yeah, Dr. Old Man. Doctor.
Esquire. He's also a lawyer. And you would talk about growing up. So tell me a little bit about your, just give me an idea, like how many siblings?
Yeah, so and all I grew up in, let me paint you a picture here. Mm-hmm. So I grew up outside of a town of 700 people in the country, mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere, suburbs. Farmland, not suburbs, not suburbs at all. Farmland, central Illinois, you know, 20 miles outside of Springfield, Illinois. I grew up on a farm, farmland, you know, and my father did, we were surrounded with literally a turkey barn on one side and chickens and sheep and cattle and then just corn. And one end of our property was a cemetery. So it's a very interesting place that I grew up on. We had a creek that ran through it.
Uh-huh.
Kind of a picturesque place. We were very poor.
But you didn't farm the land?
So when I was very young, like when my sister was young. So I'm sorry, you did ask. I have one sibling. I have a sister. Okay. She's 9 years older than me.
Okay.
A little bit of an age gap.
Yeah.
They raised pigs and things there. And my dad grew up farming, but he eventually, my uncle became road commissioner and my dad went and worked for him, mm-hmm. Doing road work for the Cartwright Township that's outside of there. When I say we're poor, like we, you know, for heat, we cut trees down and we had a wood burning stove and that's how we heated our house, things like that. It was an interesting time.
How old were you when you started helping with that?
As soon as I could. Yeah. Like, so when I think of like growing up, especially wintertime, things, I think of chopping wood. It always makes me laugh. My sister and I talk about that. It's like, what'd you do on the weekends? Chopped wood. Yeah. That's what we did, you know.
All day.
A lot of times.
You got to be warm.
You know, and my first job was detasseling corn.
I mean, that is a classic Central Illinois first job.
Yeah, like so many people, either, you know, buck bales or
walked beans.
Yep, walked beans. My sister walked beans. I detasseled.
Yep.
And both are terrible.
I am lucky enough, I somehow got out of there with doing neither.
Yeah.
But I hear they're fucking awful.
They are. You know, when you wake up in the morning and you go and it's actually cold because the corn is soaked and it cuts you. So you got to wear long sleeves. And then by, I don't know, a couple hours in, you're in the middle of summer. So it's just pouring down hot.
Yeah.
And all that steam, you're steaming a lot of times because that water's coming off of you. It's so funny, you know, and just you're like, what am I doing?
Do you remember what your rate was, what you got paid?
We got paid really well for the time, and I feel like it was like $3.75 or $4 an hour or something along there, you know. And I feel like at that time it was like a quarter above minimum wage, and we were like, hell yeah,
now we're,
but I was happy to get it, you know. And I like, so I wanted a car when I turned 16. I wasn't 16 at the time.
Uh-huh.
I wanted a car. I was saving for that. I wanted to go to college. I was saving for that. So that was very much on my mind.
Yeah. So your dad, that's. And did you get a car when you were 16?
1984 Ford Tempo.
Well,
$1,200.
$1,200. Is that a good deal for a Ford Tempo? I don't.
Right now, I would say it's a terrible deal.
Okay,
but back then, I thought I was doing okay.
Okay, so your dad worked for the road commission. Did your mom work? What did your
mom
do?
My mom had originally, she had worked for the state of Illinois. She actually was like, she did punch cards for computers. That's how dating that, you know, when the computers literally did punch cards, and then she retired or you know quit and became a stay at home mom with my sister and then with me. My mom had a lot of health issues. So when my mom was young, she had scarlet fever, and she was actually bedridden for 9 months when she was in high school.
Nine months. Did
she
have to retake a grade?
She got to do it at home. Like they brought her everything, and that gave her heart issues. And they actually told her she'd never have children.
Mm-hmm.
So they told her she couldn't have children because it had damaged everyone. She had two. So, you know, hey.
So she had a lot of health issues, and she worked from home. How did her and your dad get along?
They got along very well. It's funny to say meant for one another. They were very much meant for one another. My mom was the boss. My mom, her entire life suffered from depression. Mm-hmm. That's no.
Was it diagnosed?
It was not. Yes, but not until I went to college.
Okay.
And all growing up, my mom just had anger issues, I would say. Like, she was sad. It's funny. We had so I had a very bad speech impediment when I was younger.
Oh, okay.
And up until like
what
I was seven,
was like,
I didn't pronounce things properly. I thought I was, but I wasn't. So one of the things they told me to do, or my parents, was to get a tape recorder and to tape record me talking. Uh-huh. And I would hear myself, and it was like, oh, well, that's not what I think I'm saying. So Mrs. Yednick was my speech teacher.
Mrs. Yednick, okay.
And so I'll never forget, we got a speech, a tape recorder, and I still have it downstairs, the tape. And it's like both sides of just me talking. And so what they had me do was interview people. And so I'd interviewed my sister, and I interviewed my dad and my grandparents. I interviewed my mom. And that was like a turning point when I was a little older in my life. And I went back and I listened to it.
Okay.
And I'm like, so what do you do, mom? She's like, obviously she was in a mood. She's like, I'm a goddamn slave. I cook and clean and I take care of you kids. And, you know, and my life sucks. And I'm like, all right, mom, great. Now you're going to be interviewed by Mr. T. Literally. I'm like, yeah. As a kid, I totally wasn't following it.
And was it normal though that your mom would say shit like that all the time?
And so the other thing is, you know, she would get mad at someone. My dad was not that way. My dad was incredibly laid back, nice, the peacekeeper.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that my mom did that bothered me and my sister, we always talk about this, is if she got mad at someone, she wouldn't speak. But let's say she got mad at me because of something.
Yeah.
She wouldn't speak to anyone in the house for days, like not a word. She'd make dinner. She'd do the things she's supposed to do. You know, if she's mad at my sister, I'd be like, mom, can I do something? She'd just walk away or just stare at you and not speak. And as a child, you're thinking like, what is going on? Like, you don't know what's going on. You don't, it doesn't, you know, and your dad's like, well, just, you know, avoid mom right now and don't talk to her.
Would
and
she maybe talk? Do you think she talked to your dad in private?
Probably you would have to, I would think.
Yeah.
But she was sick and we didn't know that. And I think she was too proud at the time to talk to someone about that, you know? And instead of doing that, she'd just get mad and she wouldn't speak to people.
For days.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 4 or 5 days at a time. I remember one time she hadn't spoke to us like in a week. And we were, I don't know. My sister was still at home. I was probably like 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this. And she just got mad. And she was like, she was huffing and puffing and doing stuff around the house. And my aunt and uncle showed up out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Hi, how are you? And she was happy and it was over with. And when they left, she was fine. And I just remember like it was always like that. Just all of a sudden she's talking.
So she never showed it to anybody besides you guys.
No one.
So if you were out, say, at the grocery store and maybe I used to run around at the grocery store, piss my mom off. Would she not show it then?
Not so much, but I didn't do that because you didn't do that. You know what I mean?
You knew the consequences
of
those actions.
You know, and she was, you know, she was just she would take away things. You didn't get grounded. You know, in my house, I was grounded one time in the entire time I grew up, and I actually didn't do what they thought I had did. And when I proved that I didn't do it, I got grounded. Like, I don't even remember at this time, like, what it was. It was like this pity. And my dad's like, you're not grounded. Go leave. I'm sure he caught hell for that, you know, because it was just like a pride thing for my mother.
So did you feel like, say, when your mom was not talking for days on end, did you feel like it was your job to cheer her up?
No, like the whole house was just depressed. You know what I mean?
So you,
like, when you're young, you try to.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Would you talk to your sister about it? Like, I know there was an age gap, but.
So I didn't until when my sister turned 18, she moved out immediately. And some weekends after that, she got an apartment and she lived in Springfield. Mm-hmm. I would go and stay with her.
Mm-hmm.
And she would talk to me about those things. The problem at that time is, in your mind, your parents can do no wrong. She's 18 and I'm 8 years old, or 9 at the time. You know, there's 9 years difference with us. And she's like trying to talk to me about those things. I'm like, no, you're just trying to.
You're trying to stir shit.
Yeah. You know, even at that time. And even until my 20s, I thought that a lot of times, because you kind of put up guards for people, or I did.
What would your sister, what was she saying to you? Like the general message?
You know, just like that's not healthy, you know, and things like, you know, she shouldn't be treating us like that and dad should stand up for us. And he did in his own way, you know, but you're just, you know, looking back at it, she was very upset and angry and got out as soon as she could, you know, and just things like that. You know, you need to make sure you do this so that you don't turn out like mom, you know, things like that. And as a kid, you're like, what are you talking about? I don't want
to
hear
that. So then were you, you're probably like your sister was the enemy to you.
Right.
In a way.
Right. For a long time, it, you know, and then that's a hard thing to rationalize and realize, you know, or to make amends with.
Yeah. It's a really good point about parents, right? Is that at least for me, and it sounds like for you, man, it's like, well, it's my parents and they know all or, and you know, they're the adults. And so that whatever they tell me, whether it be, you know, you got to wash your hands before dinner or, there was a talking snake in the Garden of Eden. I'm all like, yep. Okay. Cause my parents said it. Right. Mm-hmm. And, I dealt with my mom, dealt with depression as well. And she spent a brief amount of time in a home, for depression. And, I can only remember a few times where she did the whole not talking thing, but I remember how troubling it felt. And like, there's this pall over everything.
Exactly. It's like this wet blanket of anger is over everything. And so no one's doing anything, you know. Like I said, I grew up in the country. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. Mm-hmm. When you woke up in the morning, you went outside, you played, and you didn't come back in.
Yeah.
And that was because she didn't want you in the house. And you also probably most of the time
you're like,
didn't want
me the fuck out of here.
You know, and she was there, but we didn't go places. She didn't take me places, mm-hmm. things like that. Like once a year we would go shopping for clothes, and if I had been good, we would see a movie. You know, and that was
during the clothes shopping trip.
Yeah, that was my treat.
How
for
did
the
you
summer.
Get so knowing you, and since I've known you, you've always been very pop culture
funny,
sensitive. So how did you do that in such a cloistered environment?
So we live in the middle of nowhere. Uh-huh. I told you, and we got two things for free: cable and newspapers, because the newspapers would drop off in our barn. The stacks of papers for them to come get, so we got one for free. And then they buried through our property the cable, so they ran it to us and said a thank you. We got cable television in the middle of nowhere because they took it to Petersburg, the town you know, down the road. And so I grew up watching USA Up All Night and things like that, you know. And I when I was sad, things like that, I would hide in my room. I had a television in my room, and I would just watch bad TV, you know what I mean, and escape, I think it was the best way to put it. Also, living on a farm land, you know, in the middle of nowhere, you don't have friends around you. You can't go to your buddy's house because there's no one there.
I was going
to
ask you too, you know, you make friends at school, maybe you go over and hang out with a friend. Did you ever notice, oh, wait a minute, this is different than my house. There's not this horrible pall over everything, or no?
You know, when we would do things like that, you know, I had not so much, because one of my good friends, his parents were going through a horrible divorce growing up. And I always remember them fighting. But you're a kid at that time. You're just like, that's life. Yay. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Did your parents fight?
Not a lot. No, they didn't really fight.
Well, you said early on is that your mom was the boss.
Yeah. And my dad would stand up for things, but they were very much a very good couple together. You mm-hmm. know, other than the depression stuff, they didn't have a lot of things to quarrel about. They were very happy together.
Didn't they stay married?
Yes.
And so you said that you didn't get grounded. You got things taken away. Was there any other way that you were punished?
My mom, very much spankings, you know, hitting. Uh-huh. If she had something, and I think this is more of a reflex, uh-huh. she got mad, she'd throw it.
She'd throw something at you.
A pan, anything.
A pan.
And that was thrown at my sister one time.
Okay.
And my mom didn't spank you with your hand. Uh-huh. She spanked you with a paddle.
Yeah.
And this is going to, I don't want to, this was not abuse. You know what I mean? It wasn't like I didn't just get beat all the time, but if you did something. But the sick thing of this to me was, so we would, she had a paddle. Uh-huh. And if you did something that she deemed you needed to be spanked, you had to go get it.
A ritual.
She would decorate it.
What do you mean decorate?
She'd get markers out. You'd come in. She's coloring on the paddle. Hope you're not bad today because I'm not in the mood. So I have it downstairs.
You still have the paddle?
I have it. I kept it. And it's got like yeah, just drawings and coloring, you know, and things like that. That's got to be wrong in some way.
So wait, so you would come into the room and your mom would already, it's just a normal day and she'd be coloring on the paddle?
Yeah, because she's like in a bad mood and she's like, today's not the day. You know what I mean? You're getting up. You're like, hi, mom. Morning. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, did you live in fear of that paddle?
Very much so.
Yeah.
Especially going and getting it. And you know how like you're like, no, no. And a lot of times, you know, you don't, you're a kid, who knows, mm-hmm. but you don't feel like you deserve it, but you're still going to go get it, you know, and you got
to
do it.
Your parents tell you to do it. That's you're going to do it.
Like psychological terror.
Yeah.
You know?
My dad told me that when he was a kid, would be forced to choose the switch.
Yeah. Pull them off the tree. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You know, so.
Okay. So how old were you when that stopped?
The paddle? I mean.
Even in high school?
I didn't really get, you know, that pretty much. Yeah. I couldn't tell you an age, but by my teen years, I no longer got, you know, spankings or anything like that. But.
Okay. So living out there in the middle of nowhere, and I guess we'll say a challenging household, and you said you kind of would hide in your room and retreat. Do you think that you had a depression of sorts?
Very much so. So I knew I was sad. I knew things were going on. I actually didn't talk to a doctor about it until after college.
After college, okay.
Yeah, and I knew that I was... things weren't right. You know, I was sad. I would hold on to anger. Not so much anger. I wouldn't be angry. I would think about things. Like if something happened, if you wronged me, I would never let it go. Doesn't mean I would do it to you. I'd replay it in my mind over and over and over again. You know, like this person, you know, did this to me. I can't trust him. I can't trust him. And finally I went and I talked to a doctor, and he wasn't a therapist, but we talked, and I actually was put on Lexapro at that time.
Oh, okay. How old were you at this time?
Probably 23. It was right after college.
Uh-huh.
And it made a world of difference.
Okay.
And then I decided, wow, I feel great. I don't need to be on that anymore.
Yeah. Aha. I've done that many times.
And then you have a few months of good, and then you crash down, you know? And so he was my doctor, and he retired, you know, this. Uh-huh. So I went to another doctor. He actually said, Lexapro's an old person drug. We need to try something else on you. And I had Prozac and Effexor, and Effexor makes me violently nauseous with any movement.
That has a lot of side effects.
Like if I would get in a car and it moved, whether I was driving anyone, I would feel like I... motion sickness, and I had to get off of it immediately. The only thing that
did you ever throw up in your truck?
No, I didn't. I can't even imagine throwing up in a truck.
No, it's only a really
you wouldn't know
rude,
anything about that, would you?
Motherfucker would do that.
Naked juice,
orange naked juice.
That's right.
Everywhere in Brent's very nice truck. Anyway, okay, so you were on Effexor. You had to get off of that.
Yeah, and then finally, I told this guy that had told me this stuff. I didn't like how he said that, and he just felt like he was throwing drugs at me. So I left, and I went to another doctor who was my doctor until I moved up here. In fact, she was... I went to her for a while after that. She was great, and she, you know... would talk to me, and we'd doing through everything. We got back on Lexapro, and I've been on it for years and years and years.
Are you still on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, daily. Yep.
Yeah. I have a lot of people close to me who take Lexapro. That's one I've never tried.
It's a lower. It just keeps you even keel.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was my problem. Is I would go where I did this not just that one time. Even on the Lexapro, I go, I feel fine. Why do I need this? And all of a sudden, I married my wife, and everything's great. And so you quit taking it, and then you're a little while into it, and she's like, "What's going on?" And you're angry all the time about stupid crap, and you forget, and you go, "Oh yeah, wait, I quit taking this, and I'm back to." Bad.
Yeah.
Know?
The argument that my therapist has made to me and many people have made to me is, well, if you're on blood pressure medicine, would you just stop taking it? And I'd be like, well, this is different. Blah,
you
blah,
don't
blah.
Know me. Yeah, you don't know my life. I tell you what, a lot of people probably would, sadly enough.
Yeah. So I have tried going off it, but I've made the, I've accepted that I'm going to be on something for the rest of my life. I don't see any way around it.
Well, I'm on two things, two pills a day. Lexapro and a blood pressure medicine.
Blood pressure. Do you have you always had blood? Is that in your family?
No, it's not. And I didn't really get high blood pressure. And I'm heavy, but it never was a factor until I had all those issues with my gallbladder. Gallbladder died, which I didn't even know was a thing, and it ruptured, and I had sepsis, and it messed up. Yeah, so I was on, oral and injectable steroids for over a year because it messed up all my just everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I was fighting infection for months and months and months. I was going in and getting IV antibiotics. And then after that, I've had high blood pressure. When I went in, I never had blood pressure issues. And I went into the hospital when it had ripped open. We didn't realize it. My blood pressure was 2-something over, like 190-something. It was terrible. And so they thought I was having a heart attack at first when I was in septic shock. But, and then since then, I've had issues. So they don't think I'll have to be on it forever. But, and I'm not super high. I'm like 140s or 150s, you know, and it's coming down.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I want to ask you, going back to what you said, I would replay things in my mind. Would you find a certain satisfaction when you would replay them over and over? And would you like...
I think I was satisfied being depressed.
You liked being depressed?
I liked...
The comfort of it?
That sounds so weird to say.
Sure.
I think I felt satisfaction in giving myself a reason for being depressed, other than just saying, oh, you're sick or you have depression or this and then the other. Well, they'd wrong me, so I should be. You know what I mean? Wronging is the wrong thing to say.
It's somebody else's fault. It's exactly. It's not my cause.
Everyone should feel this way if this has happened to you.
You ever heard that saying, like, if you're surrounded, well, not to quote Spaceballs, but if you're surrounded by assholes, maybe you're the asshole.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is not to say that you're an asshole.
No, I know, but you're exactly right. Like, you know, God forbid, you know, it's, you know, it's probably a woman's fault, said, the great scholar
Jimmy Buffett.
Yep. Okay. You know, and that's what, you know, not only I don't mean that I only use that relationship, that's just for everything in my life, you know. It's easier to blame others than yourself.
Did you, for years after, even though when your sister first brought it up to you about your mom and you were very resistant to it, did you ever have a lot of residual anger at your mom for the way that she behaved?
I did for a lot of time. And I didn't really forgive her, and she's passed. And I don't think I really forgave her until after she passed. But I was loving with her, you know, and I didn't take it out on her. But it took a long time for me to come to terms with things.
Okay. And when you were an adult, did she treat you differently?
So I told you... So. She, when I went to college, went to a doctor and got diagnosed with depression.
Did they medicate her?
Yes.
Okay.
And she became a completely different person. The mother that I had always wanted to have, caring and thoughtful. And I think that I resented her a little bit for spending all those years refusing to get help, refusing to talk to someone. Because I know my father had talked to her about things like that. Like, you know, this isn't Ryan. We should talk to someone. Uh-huh. Things like that. And she refused. And so I was happy because she was a happy person for the first time really in my life.
Yeah.
She had, you know, my mom had been thin her entire life. And then she had gotten sick in the last, you know, years. And, you know, the last, I don't know, 15 years of her life, she was heavier. She'd been on a prednisone and things like that. And she'd gained a lot of weight, never lost it. She had body issues and things like that. And she just, you know, all this stuff manifested into anger, you know, and then all of a sudden one of these days, boom, she's happy. And I think I resented that to an extent, if that makes any sense.
Well, do you know what drove her to finally get help?
I imagine us being out of the house and my dad just made an ultimatum. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm guessing. I'm guessing. She had made... my sister didn't know that she was medicated. She never, you know, we were talking about this recently and she goes, I didn't know that, you know, and thinks she, I guess they thought that she had just changed, you know? And I was like, yeah, because I talked about those things. I talked about it with her when I went to, to the doctor. That was one of the reasons for me going, with her telling me it's okay and all these things, you know? And so.
Did you feel shame about it before that?
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Something's wrong with me. Would I easily, but do you feel shame if you need to take, you know, a medicine, any other medicine? No, but for these things you do.
Yeah, society.
Because society
says,
has told us that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So that's really great news about, so it was after you went to college, your mother got help, and then she became a totally different person. Did you ever have a conversation later in life with your sister about kind of those conversations she tried to have with you when she left the house?
Yeah, so we had, there was two incidents that pushed me over with my mom, like to where, like, I almost walked away. And then these are the ones that I really talked about with my sister. So I had a cousin, this is a crazy story, it's just a real quick one. So my cousin was pregnant, and they were going to induce, so, you know, they do a C-section, and on this date, she goes in and has a very close cousin. She goes in to have the C-section, and there's a successful birth, everything. They send her home after the normal time. She doesn't feel good, and they take her back to the hospital, and she had developed a blood clot, and she died. And they figured, unfortunately, they thought that it was due to too much of the medication. But of course, the autopsy was inconclusive. So anyway, on top of that, so her husband is brought a brand new baby. He goes to the hospital. His wife dies. He goes home and his house is in flames, on fire. His house burned down. What can you even imagine? So no. My mom didn't tell me, and this is someone very close, and a girl that I worked with, who was from Springfield in college, she worked with me. Her mom saw in the paper, her mom called her and she called me and told me, and I was devastated, you know, just very upset, you know, how could you not tell me this? So then my grandfather had been sick. And I had came home and saw him, and not in the hospital, but he'd been sick, you know, and I went back to college, and Tanya, my sister, calls me and says, Grandpa died. I'm like, oh, my, or she says something about Grandpa dying. I'm like, what? What? And she's like 2 days ago.
What?
My mom hadn't called and told me.
Was this your mother's father?
My mother's father. So I called her and I'm like, why do you tell me? She goes, my father died. Can't you have a little bit of respect for me? And what do you say to that?
I don't know what to say to that, because that's completely unfair.
And I was just like, okay, that's fine. That's two literally deaths of people close to me that they hadn't even cared to tell me. Like, I didn't know how to take those. I didn't know how to take it, you know? And it would have been, my father later was like, he's like, she was calling everyone. I thought she called you. You know what I mean? Because I kind of pushed back on him later.
Like, why didn't...
Yeah. And, you know, and so we talked about those things, my sister and I, afterwards, trying to figure out, Jesus, you know, like...
did she tell your sister?
Yeah.
But did not tell you. Did you ever find out why?
I don't know.
Okay.
I do not know.
But so that was one of the few things where you're like, I can't do this anymore.
Right. And, you know, and you don't want to like sever ties with people. But I tell you what, man, you know, that was one of the things when you're in college at that time. I'm like a senior in college. And I'm like, when I'm moving back, I'm getting my own place. There's no way I would even think about even moving back with them for any time, you know, because of things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's hard to deal with. It's hard to cope with.
Yeah, Jesus.
You're supposed to, you know, you feel like you'd be the first, like, oh my God, Grandpa died, you know.
That's how
you
family call works.
Should.
Yeah.
Should.
Well, Let me just ask you one more question, then I think we're going to take a little break. Did you guys ever reconcile about that, or did you just kind of accept it and move on?
No, she was unwilling to admit she did anything wrong, and I was in the wrong for caring about either of those. So even when I brought him up later, there was no, you don't bring that up.
So you just had to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard fucking thing to do.
Sure is. Swallow it and move on.
Yeah, I can see that it's still pretty.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a, yeah, they really bothered me. Yep.
Yeah. Well, on that note.
Speaking of dwelling.
let's you know what? Let's just take a little break because that's a lot of information. So thanks for sharing that, Brent. Let's take a break and then we're going to get into some other stuff when we come back here on Sad Times.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today.
You know, Brent, I didn't think that was sad enough. So I want to talk to you about some more sad shit.
Let me get ready. I got my self-medication here. Okay. Here we go. It's actually a Diet Mountain.
Yeah, Diet Mountain Dew. Hey, that shit runs in Brent's veins.
It does. It does.
I have to ask you, parents and growing up and loneliness and depression and a mother who maybe doesn't deal with things in the mm-hmm. healthiest of way. How did you do in relationships?
You know, I've had. I always haven't had the best of luck and love. I've had a lot of relationships, you know, through the years. I never was the guy to jump into a relationship and then like 2 or 3 weeks later, they're like, oh, that didn't work out and you move on. I was more like a year is a short relationship kind of thing. And a lot of non-starters. Now, my wife and I are great. You know, it's funny. We always joke about how the only arguments we have are about other people. Like, their arguments, like you get around people that are having arguments like, oh man, I felt, you know, terrible for so-and-so. No, I felt terrible for so-and-so. And we're like, we're going back and forth. Like, wow, we're arguing about them. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Insert, you know, whatever. but it was a long road to find that, you know. And I dated a girl through college, and she had a, you know, for a lot of college, she had a child. You know, when we started dating, she had a 6-month-old. And
wow.
Yeah. And I dated her for the first couple of years of college. So before you knew me.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so I had a lot of college was that, you know, and having.
Did you help raise the kid?
Absolutely. You know, for the first while we lived together in college and at SIU Carbondale. Yeah, uh-huh. Absolutely.
Okay.
And then, you know, you get out of college and you start. We had a lot of mutual friends, you know, in college, and we've talked about this before, but one of our buddies, he calls me, he's needing a job.
Uh-huh.
And his name is Mark, and I'm like, well, I work for this company, and I think you could probably get on. He's like, well, that'd be great. And at the time, he was living out of state.
So he was not in Illinois?
Not at all.
Okay.
I believe he was in Missouri at the time. That might not be right, but anyway, not long after college, you know, we'd been friends in college. He calls, you know, and he gets on at US Cellular. It doesn't matter. I guess it doesn't matter saying it. And he gets on. And so we're working, and not long after, he's my boss, you know, not too
he was
long
your
after
boss.
That. He actually became my boss in a roundabout way. So I actually answered to someone else, but he was at the location I was at, so I had like two bosses that were. It's a weird situation
to
work there because I wasn't in sales or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
And my girlfriend applied at US
Same
Cellular,
company, yeah,
and she gets hired. And
how long had you been together when she got hired?
6 months, let's
six
say.
Months. Okay.
You know, we were together over the 2 years, let's say.
Okay.
And after a while, she had car issues. She like blew her head gasket, her radiator, all this stuff. And so she's going to be closing. And so I'm picking her up every night and taking her to her house. We didn't live together or anything like that. Mark, being the wonderful, nice guy he was like, well, why don't we, I can close or open or do whatever shift.
Uh-huh.
She's not that far from me. I'll just drive her home. And I was like, whoa, you would really do that? He's like, yeah, there's no reason to drive across town, do all this. I'm like, great.
Well, can I ask you just a clarifying?
Absolutely.
Was Mark in a relationship at this time?
Mark is married with, at that time, I believe one child.
Okay.
Maybe two.
Okay.
I'm trying to think back on the timeline.
Okay.
But yes,
so he's married. Okay.
He got married in college. And
I remember that.
Yep. And then they had a relationship. As soon as they got to Springfield, they had like a real wedding. I say a real wedding, like they got married, you know. And I was his best man in his wedding.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
Yep, I was his best man.
Yeah.
And good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Well, little do I know. So I am having issues with this girl, and we end up breaking up. And a friend of mine that knew her calls me and says, hey, I don't want to alarm you or anything like that, but I am at the mall and I saw your ex-girlfriend Trisha shopping at the maternity store. And I'm like, what? You know, she's like,
oh,
at the maternity store.
I don't want to alarm you, but my goodness.
And like you're trying to do the math in your head. And we had not been together, and we had issues. We weren't being physical at all towards the end. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know.
So you were kind of like roommates.
Right.
Did you feel,
No.
But you were just like friends. It was that type of relationship where that goes away.
Yeah, but she still worked at my work, you know, so we broke up.
Can I ask if you felt guilty about that?
About her being pregnant?
No. I'm sorry. About the end of your relationship where you weren't physical anymore.
No, I didn't feel guilty, you know, about that. I had feelings that she was being unfaithful. And so those were my choices to not be physical or anything like that.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the first thing I do, you hear this, is you go to your best friend, you know, and, you know, I go to Mark and I say, listen, I just got a call from this girl. She saw yesterday at the time. Now, my girlfriend, my ex, was working that day at the store where I was at. I go in to talk to Mark, and I say, I think Trish is pregnant. And I'm trying to do the math in my mind. I don't think it works out. I go, I have to talk to her. I have to have a paternity right. test.
Yeah.
He's like, oh my God. Oh. And he's like really jarred. I'm like, this is just between us, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. I walk out. He immediately calls her in to his office and they leave together for the day. And I'm like, I don't want to like drag this out forever. Long story short, he was having an affair with her. It started on those rides home.
Yeah.
It was his child. And when I found out, he tried to get me fired from the company, my friend. He told them that I was not doing my job and all this stuff. What saved me was him and her were emailing back and forth and printing the emails on company
computers?
Letterhead. And yeah. I had sent her out of work stuff that was like, hey, this has nothing to do with work. I want to do a paternity test. I hope you're going to say, okay, if not, I'll have to do whatever legal things. If I'm sure this is not my child, but if it is, I will 100% be in, right. there for everything. She printed that and they were showing people at work making fun of me.
They were making fun of you?
Yes.
At work? How did you find that out?
The people at work told me because they're like, I think that they think we're not on they're on their side or something. So it was really weird. So immediately at this exact same time, we get a call about money missing. And
when you say we, do you mean your family?
The company.
The company. Okay.
The company does. Well, so I told you Mark wasn't, he was my boss, but not really. So you can't touch employee accounts unless you're a manager
uh-huh.
or me or him.
Uh-huh.
So they're like, will you look into this? He was embezzling money from our company. I don't know if he was giving it to his wife. I don't know if he was giving it to her. Thousands and thousands. He was like negating payments that were cash and giving credits and then pocketing the cash. And what had happened was he had put a few onto like the wrong account. So people had the receipts,
uh-huh.
but there was nothing in there. It had been canceled, the payment,
yeah.
and then the credit was applied. So he gets fired from the company. And
at this point, are you guys speaking?
At this point, when he gets fired, like I wasn't 100%. I didn't know for sure. We hadn't found, I hadn't had the conversation saying you did this. We never did. He immediately moved away. And he never spoke to me again as soon as he left the company. And I didn't find this stuff, I'm not the one who turned him in for embezzling or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
That was out of my hands. They just had me pull up paperwork and as I'm looking at it, handing it over to like the district manager. I'm like, that's not really making sense.
And at this point, you hadn't talked to him about it, but did you know about the affair?
Yeah, so I knew, I found, so I found out, and I went to her, and I said, listen, I need to have a paternity test. Can you tell me how far along you are? And she actually said, that falls under the umbrella of none of your fucking business. And I was like, wow. I didn't do this girl wrong, or anything like that. I didn't do, So it was a real rough, my who at the time I thought was my best friend has an affair on his wife with my girlfriend, gets her pregnant, then he just leaves.
Do we know for sure that it's his kid?
Absolutely. So yes, so they had a paternity test and it is his child. Yes.
Does his wife? Well, I don't want to go too far.
I don't know. I'm sure she does. She has to.
Yeah.
And then I know that he has nothing to do with the child. He's and signed all rights over to her now husband.
Got it. Okay. So, and you never had a chance to talk to him about this?
Nope.
Does it still?
Nope. Don't want to.
Don't want to talk to him.
No, I have nothing to say to him. For whatever reason, people do things. I'm more upset that he abandoned his child than him doing that to me. You know what I mean? I think that bothers me more because I've seen guys do horrible things and get caught in the heat of the moment. The printing up emails I'd sent, which it's funny because the emails I sent were like polite and nice. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm like, and they had had them at, you know, HR had the emails, you know, afterwards. And I'm like, yeah, I wrote those. They're like, oh, well, this is done on your own time and it's well worded. I don't exactly understand why.
Did they try to use those against you?
I think they were going to try to get me fired.
Oh.
Was the thought process, and he was trying to turn people against me. I don't know, because it all he shot the crap on that when he embezzled all that money and got caught. So,
wow. And how long ago was this?
So this would have been in the like 07, 08.
Okay.
You know, it's 12, 13, you know,
about 12 in years there. Ago. Yeah. Okay. So, wow. After that whole ordeal, did you have what became of your relationship life? I mean, was it hard for you to trust people
yeah
again?
It was. And so then I'd had a couple bad relationships like that, and nothing like keeping on that whole talking of dating people from work. So pre her and post her, you know, I had met this other girl from my work. She got hired. I met her. She was a friend of a friend. I knew her beforehand.
Okay.
And she was a lesbian. Okay. So she, you know, she was a lesbian.
She was out.
Yeah.
That's how she identified.
She grew up in a household with lesbians. Her mother was a lesbian.
Okay.
Married. Her mother died when she was young. She was actually raised by her mother's partner.
Oh. Oh,
you know?
Okay.
And, one of those things. And so then I would go to the gym and she was at the gym. So then we're like workout buddies and stuff. She's very pretty, very gorgeous girl. And then we're like, well, let's have some drinks after the gym. And then that leads to us having sex. And then it turns into, well, this is just a physical relationship. And I don't know why I'm even doing this. This is her saying this, but, you know, as long as you don't catch feelings, you know, it's fine. 'Cause I've never done anything like this before, she said. And I'm like, yeah. And then 6 months later, she tells me she's in love with me. And I like this girl a lot. I liked her a lot.
Were you reciprocating that? Or yes. Did you want to reciprocate
that? Yes. And so we started dating. This is pre that last relationship. And then, so she, she had to have like a medical procedure done. And she went into the hospital. And one of the things they say is, are you pregnant? Or could you be pregnant? And she said, I'm a lesbian. And they said, okay. And she actually was pregnant and had a miscarriage.
Because of the medical procedure?
Yeah. So she had she had her gallbladder actually removed.
And what's with you and gallbladders?
I don't know, man. Don't get near me.
Shit. Yeah, you could have told me that before. I was sitting right across from you. Wait. Okay. So she had her gallbladder removed. And because of that,
she had a miscarriage.
And you had obviously no idea.
I had no idea. None. She called and told me and then disappeared. So she had no longer. Okay, let me rephrase this. She was no longer working. She had left the company and she was working elsewhere. She quits her job and moved to St. Louis. Like, tells me, I had a miscarriage. I'm so sorry I've done this. I can't see you. And left.
How did you feel when you found out that she had been pregnant with your
destroyed
child?
Destroyed. I didn't, you don't even have time to process anything and then it's already taken from you. You know what I mean? It's not like she had it hurt a lot too, because it's not like she went and had an abortion, which that of course would have been her right. But she just said, no, there's no way I could be pregnant. I'm a lesbian.
Was she in that much? Well, I don't want to speak for her, but it sounds like she was in a lot of denial, because at first when you had the physical.
So we had very long conversations about that, because she was in denial of her feelings for me. And she actually said, people are lesbian, I believe, from birth, or gay, or bisexual. And I think that was her. But it was expected of her to be a lesbian. And so she hid me from family and things like that. And it was very unhealthy for her. I was very unhealthy for her. I think we cared about each other a lot. But it was unhealthy for her, because certain expectations were put on her that she wasn't ready to be a part of. You know what I mean? Or to be open about.
Do you think that were you just trying to be wait for her to come around?
I thought I'd wait it out and wait she'd it out. See. Because I have really cared about her. Mm-hmm. And then, like, and so I'm told you she moved away. She ends up moving back. We reach out to one another, and then it starts over again.
And this is after the relationship we just talked about, right?
And then she's dating Simon, but we're still, you know, seeing
she's
each other.
A woman or a man?
A woman.
Okay.
I was the only guy that I know of that she had dated or had been like that with. I'm not. Uh-huh. I'm sure I'm not the only person she'd ever been with, man-wise, but you know what I mean. Enough to where when I was started dating Lisa, Lisa would be at my house without me. I'd be working, and I would tell her, I can almost guarantee you that one of these days a girl is going to show up at the door asking for me. No matter what she says, it's not true. Like, she might say, like, we're in love or something like that, you know, because she had done that before. And I go,
what do you mean done that before? Like with a girlfriend?
Shown up. Yeah. Or told people. Yeah. Like, she'd leave my life and then come back into my life, you know, and leave. And I told her, I go, I can't do this anymore. Uh-huh. I don't want any part of this because we're bad for each other and you are killing the emotion. I'd start a relationship and she'd show up. You know what I mean?
So she would, like, find out you're in a relationship?
I think so.
Did you guys ever talk about the miscarriage other than her telling you?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we talked about it and how big of a mistake and how much she regretted it. But it's over and it happened. And what do you do? You know what I mean? I think that was her way of dealing with it. Uh-huh. But she also ran away and moved away. Obviously.
How long was she gone?
Less than a year.
And did you guys talk while she was gone?
Not once. When I saw her, actually, it was at like a street festival, like a concert in Springfield. I didn't know she was back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was she looking for you?
No.
Okay. Nope. Wow. So did she show up when you started dating
her
now? Why?
Never seen her. Since that last time when I told her I was done, she listened. And that was good. That was good. It's good for all of us. You know what I mean? And, you know, I didn't want to have to tell her again to go away. You know what I mean? Yeah. No one wants to hear that.
Wow. Okay. So, Jesus, Brent.
It's a lot to unpack. I told you I have a lot to unpack.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. So this, what year did you start dating Lisa? Your wife?
Around 2010. We started talking.
I know
talking.
You were friendly from college on, right?
We've known each other for 21 years.
Yeah.
I met her, real quick. It was funny. She was married previously, and she was supposed to be, her and her husband were going to come down. We were doing a little reunion in Carbondale.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't come. And I was like, what the hell? You know, you had helped plan it. This was like a week or two after. She goes, I'm getting divorced, so that kind of came up, and I couldn't come down. I'm like, well, that's a pretty good reason why.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's how we actually started talking, and I don't know, maybe I'm an opportune of war or whatever, but I'm like, oh, because I'd always liked her.
Yeah. Okay. So the reason I asked, you had said earlier in the episode that your mom has since passed away. When did your mom pass away?
My mom passed in 2009, early, like 2009, but my mom had a syndrome called Lynch syndrome, and it's a genetic disorder that causes, you're gonna have cancer if you have Lynch syndrome, and instead of having, you know, whatever percentage chance women have for breast and colon and everything, it's in like the 80s and 90s the percent chance if you have Lynch syndrome. You have to get genetically tested. My sister and I did. We were both negative, luckily.
Oh, that's
because we can't pass it now. Yeah, very lucky.
Good news.
But she had breast and colon, and I mean, if it's a cancer you can have it, and she ended up passing of a brain tumor. But the difference with Lynch syndrome, it's not like the breast cancer going to other places. Each of them was its individual cancer.
It was its own. It wasn't a spreading.
So the brain tumor was a brain tumor itself. Every one of them is their own. They didn't spread.
So she would have been, close to, if my math checks out, like 69, 70?
No, she would have been, so she was younger. She was in her early 60s. So, and my dad was born in 42, and she was born in 47. So she'd been 61.
61. Okay. Yeah. So your dad was 5 years older.
Yeah.
How you know, at that time, you guys were on good terms, you and your mom?
Yes, very good. And so, you know, I had been going there and seeing her, and my grandmother had been sick, actually. And so her and her dad, her and my dad, moved her in and then she into their house to help take care of her because she had lived over an hour away. And then she had passed. And then my mom got sick. My mom, I actually, you know, in college, my mom, I had taken a semester off college to go home because my mom was so sick. Then, you know, she had just had cancer.
What year of college?
It would have been my first semester junior year.
Okay.
And I still had a house there, but I was going home constantly and I took it off and I was working, you know, because I didn't know what was going to happen. You know what I mean?
Did you take care of, were you taking, helping take care of
trying her? To, or trying to figure out what was going on. Mm-hmm. I didn't know, you know, it's just, it was.
Was your sister around too?
Yeah. At that time. Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Or at that time, my sister was always around.
Yeah.
But yes, you know, and so my mom, you know, she just struggled being sick. And pretty much from then on, she was fighting cancer, you know, of one point or another. She went through so many rounds of chemo and radiation and mastectomies and, you know, everything you can do.
How did she deal with it with, when did she know she had Lynch syndrome?
Not until she had developed the cancer. I don't know exactly when, but I, you know, we had like a family meeting to where you guys need to get tested. I immediately got tested.
Yeah.
And my sister waited a while. She didn't know if she wanted to know.
Fair. I mean,
yeah.
I can see
you know,
that.
I can see both sides. I remember I was actually having dinner at my parents' house and they called me with the news to tell me that I was negative. And I remember my mom cried. Like she was so happy. You know what I mean? So my mom's family, she was one of six. They all died. Like, she had a sister at 33, a sister at 41, I want to say. They all died of cancer, all of them. Wow. You know, another brother that died in his late 50s. I mean, they all died young. Her father had cancer. Her mother is the only one who didn't.
But it sounds like, I don't know how fucking genetics works, but it sounds like whatever
they
this
all
is,
had,
it,
I'm
it
sure her father had Lynch syndrome.
And not, yeah.
And her father had Lynch syndrome, and then all the children, probably but one, had Lynch syndrome.
Did she die at home? Your mom died at home or
she
in the hospital?
She died. So they moved her into a hospice facility.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rough watching someone with a brain tumor because they go, but they're not all, you know, you think they're just in a coma and then they might say something or, you know, we're having a conversation and she'd pop in with a word or something like that, you know, and it's a
like she would be in the bed and you'd be maybe talk to your sister and then she'd be like, say something.
Yep. You know, and she might not have said anything for a couple of days.
Was she at that point, was she at peace with it?
Very much so. Very much so.
And how was your dad dealing with it?
You know what? He dealt with it very well, and they had been so close that we very much worried about him, and you hear about a lot of people that they lose their spouse, and 6 months later, they're dead. But he made peace with it, and my dad has since passed as well, but for the rest of his life, you know, my dad would have been that one who would never have dated. If my dad had lived another 50 years, that was his wife, and he would never even thought of it.
Wow. Okay. So he when did he die?
Okay. My father died in 2016. So my father actually, he got lung cancer and then that spread to his, by the time they found out it spread to his brain and he died of a brain tumor as well.
Was he a smoker?
When he was young, he smoked when he was young. He also worked road construction forever, and he sucked all that dirt and dust and everything in. So he had breathing issues his whole life. And I know the doctor said it was just like the two worst things you could do, even though he quit when he was young of smoking. Younger, you know, it had done its.
Do you remember him smoking? No, he would have quit by the time you were born.
I barely remember. I think when I was very young, he'd smoke, but not on and off. But no,
was your mom a smoker?
Yeah. But she didn't have lung cancer. You know, that was the, you know, or not from
not
that.
Not from that.
Yeah.
It's from the Lynch syndrome. So your dad, you had said that he worked for his
Cartwright
brother.
Township. He was his brother was the road commissioner.
So he worked on the road. Now, was he living in the middle of not to be pejorative, but living in the middle of nowhere, was he an outdoorsy type guy?
So yeah, very much so. So my father's dream in life was to move to Alaska.
Alaska?
Yeah, and to be that, like, that's what he wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
And in 1986, he was actually working on our house. We had a deck over the garage. The house was built into a hill. And in 86, a board snapped. He fell and broke his back and was paralyzed. He spent
paralyzed where?
From
waist down?
The mid chest down. He could use his arms uh-huh. and head and neck and everything. Luckily, months and months of rehabilitation and everything, he learned to walk again, you know, years later. They told him he'd never walk, he'd be in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. He never really had feeling from his waist down other than pain that they have from like the nerves that are dead. I remember like he'd always, you know, when you get into like say he was going to take a bath because he couldn't stand to take a shower, they would always say like even later, you know, you had problems walking long distances or standing for a long time. You know, always put your hand in there because you could literally boil yourself and not realize it.
Like, yeah.
Make sure.
Wow.
So that, but he still worked.
On the roads?
Yeah, driving equipment and things uh-huh. like that, but also working outside as much as he could after he got, you know, to walk again, which is a tough thing when you're a kid. You know, I'm 7 years old, and they say your dad's never going to walk again.
How much respect do you have for your father?
A lot. And he provided for the whole family always. I was very close. So my dad in 2014, he was diagnosed with cancer, and Lisa made a huge sacrifice, which was I quit my job and I split duty between here and there helping take care of him instead of him going into like a hospice facility. My sister would go down there and I would, and I pretty much spent the last 2 years of my dad's life with him.
How did you guys form a different relationship because
very close, very close, you know, and just, you know, very much became friends, you know,
yeah.
other than just father and son.
Was it the classic with you, just knowing you, a lot of the joking?
My father was very much the same sense of humor I have okay. and making jokes. My mother was too. They were both jokers and you know, he made fun of himself having cancer mm-hmm. and fun of himself being in a wheelchair, and was off limits in that way with him.
Would he talk about your mom?
Very much so.
And how he missed her?
Yep. And they were religious and he had made peace, and like literally when they got... It's almost like, this sounds terrible, but they're like, yeah, you have cancer. And he's like, finally. You know what I mean? Not like he was wanting to die or anything, but I think he expected it. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? He didn't say that, but it was just like, oh, okay, cool. You want to go grab some food? And I'm like, what are we going to do about this? Yeah, you know, everything's got a purpose and a plan.
He firmly believed like he was going to see your mother
very much
when
so.
He passed
yep.
away.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And when he passed away, were you and your sister with him?
Yes. So we were there in the hospice in the room. Yep. And there when he passed. Same thing with my mother. You know, you just see him slipping and slipping. You know, I watching someone deteriorate is hard. It's very hard. So
how have you dealt with the grief?
Time, you know, and remembering, you know, I don't know. It's hard to deal with it, you know, but I am very thankful that my wife gave me those 2 years, you know?
Yeah, that's amazing. And the fact that you could have a whole nother new relationship with your dad even closer
right.
towards the end.
Right.
So, God, this has just been hilarious.
Thanks for the chuckle hour.
Yeah. I do want to ask you one other thing, because you did bring up your wife.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you were doing that, traveling back and mm-hmm. forth, how long would you be gone?
A week at a time.
Week at a time.
I might come back on for weekends, uh-huh. things like that. But, you know, so I'd come Friday night. My sister would go down for the weekends, and then I would come back Sunday, you know. So I would see. But sometimes I didn't even do that. Sometimes I'd be there for a couple weeks at a time, and then if she could get away, she'd come down, you know, could.
What was the challenge of that?
The long distance. I mean, we were newlyweds, you know, we got married in 2013, and then 2014 I moved uh-huh. away, you yeah. know, and no matter what, you it strains a relationship, but luckily she's a strong person, and we definitely made the best of it, you know, and she gave me that opportunity.
Yeah.
It was literally her idea, you know, and so I was very lucky and happy. But
how did you guys get through those strained times?
Talking as much as we could, mm-hmm. being together as much as we could, her understanding that it was, you know, out of our hands and for a good cause, you know, and then if we did start snipping at each other, realizing it and saying, hey,
we're kind of putting the brakes on it.
And then you go, oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now that you've been married six plus, when's your anniversary?
Yeah, so 2013. So this will be 6 years this year.
Okay. Now that you guys see each other every day, mm-hmm. or fucking most days. Yeah. 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 It's just, you know, grass is always greener, Brent.
Yep. No, we get along very well.
Okay, good.
And very much partners in crime. She's my best friend, you know, and so that's all you can ask for. I couldn't think of my life without her.
I'm going to go ahead and end it right there because this has been a pretty tough hour. And that's just a really hopeful thing to end on. And especially after all you've been through and the fact that you're able to.
You didn't even talk about the 9 murders that I witnessed.
What was that?
Nothing. Never mind.
Did you say something? I'm sorry. My headphones went out. Did you turn something? But thank you very much for being on.
Oh, Brent, thank you. It's good
as
to talk
the producer of the show and for talking through this. I know you've been to one therapy session.
Thanks for doing it in my studio.
Yeah, this is. Can I leave?
Whenever you want.
Oh, thank you.
You can check out at least.
Damn it! I knew I was in California. well, listen, guys. Thanks for listening, Brent. Of course, thanks for being on.
Thank you. Thank you.
Please,
very much.
If you haven't subscribed, subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a good 5-star review on Apple Podcasts.
Rate, like, and review, and smash that like button.
Yeah, what he said. He knows how to do that. Again, and we're Sad Times on Facebook. Come find us on Facebook. Go ahead and join us. We do have some pretty good conversations that come up in there. And again, the big reminder is we've all been through something that somebody else has gone through. And no matter what you're going through, you're not alone in feeling that way. And that I hope that you can find some comfort in listening to the stories of these brave people who come on and tell us. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Brent.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to a Fourth Hand Joint.